Hello, welcome back to SCI TV, the Sports Conflict Advantage. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming my colleague Anna Agafonova. Welcome.
Hi, Joshua. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining. This will be a fun conversation and an opportunity for folks to get to know some of your really interesting background and the intersectionality in a few key areas I think blend nicely with the things we focus on here at the Sports Conflict Institute.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and thank you so much for having me. And I'm very excited to tell you a little bit more about my practice and my background.
So maybe let's start there. Talk about a little bit of why you've got this unique passion for things that some people tend to avoid, which is conflict in sport.
Well, first of all, I grew up in an international boarding school, and I think there we had a lot of conflict arise between kids from different nationalities, different religions, and just seeing how, personnel and instructor was mitigate conflict between that really inspired me to then learn a little bit more about some of the, tools when it comes to conflict management. But that was very early on when I was still in my teenage years. And then my athletic background sort of connected my interest with the sports once I moved to the United States to attend University of Southern California back in 2018. And so my background really interconnected between the two. So my sports side and my desire to figure out how do people cohesively work with each other when they have different backgrounds. Brought me inevitably to USC Athletics, and then to my master's program where I focused on organizational and consumer psychology, where I really narrowed down on some of the, NIL practices. That was my treatise and my main focus of research. And yes, so that was the backbone of my current interests and my current practices, I should say.
Yeah, great. And from what I recall, somewhere along the way, people are trying to tell you that there's actually not any focus in this world on sports conflict, and you were stubbornly disagreeing. Am I right?
Yes, in my first year of law school at USC, I asked one of my professors. I am very passionate about sports. I worked in corporate sports at the time, and I was trying to find a way to connect my legal experience with my passion for sports and some of the work that I've been doing in graduate school. And I was firmly told that it's not a field; it doesn't exist. I should just forget about it and go into family disputes or alternative ADR, just do litigation or something. So, and to my surprise, I did not believe it, to be honest with you. I was like, this can't be. So I went on LinkedIn and I started just looking up people that practice, something at least similar to what we're doing at SCI. And then I came across your profile. And I just sent out a cold email introducing myself and saying that I'm very, very passionate. My background, correlates to the, the goals and the practices of SCI. And I think that was the match that happened.
No, glad you did. It's kind of like Fight Club. The first rule of sports conflict is there is no sports conflict. And
Right? Yes, absolutely. But I'm glad that I did. And I think being able to apply my academic background and my personal background as an athlete and my corporate background all in one space has allowed me to, just get better as a professional and help people fix their problems.
yeah, that diversity of disciplines you bring, I think, is a pretty critical asset to being able to tackle the types of complexities that we see across sport. You focus in particular a bit in some of your research on college sport. Do you want to talk a bit about what you were trying to figure out when it came to NIL in the college sports space?
Absolutely. So, a few years ago when NIL just, started becoming a thing, I was in grad school at the time and I was, very focused on figuring out the like what does NIL do to team trust and team cohesion? Because I think people were very happy that athletes are now able to make money and they're finally, not being taken advantage of and the endorsements are there, etc. But not many people realize what it does to, objectively young kids. when it comes to suddenly having, six, seven figure salaries and what it does for team trust and team cohesion within sports. So I primarily focused on football, and the reason for that is, it's a number one sport in the collegiate programs, and also it's a team sport, and we have the quarterback, who's the key player, gets most of the attention, most of the endorsements, and then we have, the running backs and the defense, et cetera, and the linebacks. And my goal in that research was trying to establish how does the difference in, financial opportunities and endorsement then affect locker room dynamic, right? So if you have a guy on the team making millions of dollars every year from partnerships, he has the ability to build a personal brand, and then, what come the draft season, it gets easier for him. Not necessarily easier, but the attention is there, and the ability to make money, even if you don't make it to the draft, is certainly present. Yet you have guys on the team that, get a scooter, right? And that's it. And how does the disparity between the opportunities influence cohesion and trust? So I think what we found was very interesting is we did a lot of informational interviews with kids from large programs and small programs, and we found that in larger programs where there are more opportunities to profit and to close endorsement deals and really build a personal brand, NIL affected trust a lot more. And NIL affected cohesion a lot more in comparison to some of the smaller programs. Because I think with smaller programs, I got less resources and less opportunity and had less, star players that, are known on social media. Kids just played football, if that makes sense. They enjoyed the sport. They didn't have as much pressure from, the fans, the athletic department, maintaining the scholarship, just maintaining endorsements and all of those things. So that was a very, very interesting finding. And then to conclude, the study found that NIL does negatively affect trust because it, creates feelings of jealousy, tension, and resentment among a number of players, especially in the locker room, because their point is, hey, we're putting in the same time, we're putting in the same effort, we both made it to this university, yet the opportunities that are present are just so not equal. And then, and I also affected cohesion, consequently, because it reduces unity, because, one person is able to build a personal brand and have a financial gain, and the other person is not there. And I remember the quote, comparison is the thief of joy. So a lot of kids compared themselves to their classmates, to their teammates, and were not able to, have a good relationship with them on the field or off the field. And all participants agreed that, higher trust equals to higher cohesion. And when the trust is broken over unequal financial gains, then you inevitably are not playing as well on the field because your locker room issues don't just disappear once you make it to the field.
Yeah, so it sounds like in a punchline, you kind of found out more money, more problems on the team, right? The more we elevated the resources, the more that we find, in fact, it's probably the best time ever to be a student athlete if you care about resources and support. And yet that's a real issue if a team can't find cohesion because of that comparative jealousy, analysis, angst, whatever we want to frame it as.
I think NIL it's a wonderful tool for people, who are professional athletes to be able to make money, right? Playing a sport is very expensive for families, and that needs to be understood. And some families go into severe debt over, hoping that their kid is going to become the next baseball star. And I think the concept is good, right? The concept of, Now it's with the revenue sharing, right? Opportunities with athletic departments being able to, share the profit with the athletes themselves. I think the morale there makes sense, and I am in full support that people should be able to profit from their name, image, and likeness. However, at the beginning, when I did my research, which was a few years ago, there were not any good frameworks that were able to guide the athletes and the athletic departments and the agents and the families in a way that it is done now. One of the other, I think, loops which people don't realize is international students, right, that are not able to make a cent from NIL, right? So if you have a star basketball player, hypothetically from Serbia, and the team is performing really well in whatever, any university, let's say, don't want to name names, but then, and they have a team deal, then that kid from Serbia is going to be excluded because he is unable to make any profit due to his visa restrictions. So here it's also very interesting to see that NIL is just a way to, help local talent grow. But it's not in any shape or form designed to A, attract foreign talent, and B, make sure that, universities are a hub for training Olympians. And I think that's very important to understand. And it's the training programs where kids go and they train for 4 years, and now that we have all of these sports coming out, all of the athletes coming out, and then you can't expect foreign talent to come to the US to then train here and then win gold medals, silver medals, bronze medals in the Olympics if we're not giving them any incentives. We're reducing their scholarships, we're not allowing them to participate in NIL, hence why the pool of talented athletes is now reduced, leaving the athletic departments with less revenue too, and less opportunities to do global scaled work.
And as you were talking to teams and doing your research, did you get a sense of how proactive teams were being about getting out in front of some of this team dynamic issue, which obviously if you're trying to win, talent is part of it, but how you assemble that talent, the culture you build around it, and frankly, from our perspective, the dispute systems you put in place
I think
is important.
at the time when I was, focused on my research, people were just so overwhelmed and they thought that this was the best opportunity ever. And they, you don't really, people don't tend to focus on problems until they're there. And we were at the front line of, seeing what this new ruling does to the kids, which is, once again, I'm in support of the financial gains, but I think it should be done right. Because when you have a 22-year-old, 21-year-old making six, seven figures without doing the due diligence of how do you invest, how do you save, what do you do with that money, how do you not let it become overwhelmed, how do you manage it with your teammates? I think, and when it just started, both the faculty, the trainers, the coaches, everyone in the field did not really know how to approach it well because it was something new. And I don't think it was handled well enough. Now that there is momentum and people were able to identify, okay, there is a gap in, how do I identify that it's not a pay for play model and people are actually doing an endorsement? How do we set up a commission that is gonna, oversee all the deals and make sure that they're legit? Okay, now we have this set in place. And how do we make sure that, their people, students know how to like fill their contracts and how to do their taxes, how to do all of that? Okay, now there are agencies that specialize in that. So I think the building blocks are certainly there now. And with SCI, which is super crucial, and the work that we do is making sure that locker room issues, first of all, don't even happen and they don't even start, but let alone they don't travel to the field. Because once you have financial disparities which create conflict, you cannot have a successful whatever program, football, basketball, doesn't matter, if some of the primary concerns are not fixed properly, and that there are no resources to teach both staff and the players on how to navigate certain issues, because they're going to happen either way. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what sport, it doesn't matter what country, team disputes will happen all the time. It's about teaching the young athletes on how to handle them without letting it get personal.
Now, you've named a really important issue. So over the past decade plus, one of the greatest frustrations I've had professionally has been this real challenge with getting high performance teams and organizations to embrace the idea that you want to prevent it and that it's something that's inevitable and needs to be put and resourced into. And often, to your point, we wait till opportunities are in really bad places. We wait till seasons are lost. We wait till there's a dispute that's risen to arbitration or a court. And those are really late places to be resolving these things. Now that you've taken some fresh eyes on this, any thoughts on how we start to get the broader population in sport to really embrace this idea that these are fundamental core competencies for success?
Honestly, I think it's a lot more simple than people look at it. Some people just simply don't want to invest because they don't think that it's important. But think of a professional team. They have X number of players, which are individual people. And if you don't do any cohesion work, you can't expect them to perform well on the field. And I think the responsibility of a coach is to be able to understand, hey, here we're not doing so well. There's probably some issue between like two of the three or whatever, how many players. And I think seeking out the resources earlier on is the key, because when it starts falling apart, it's much harder to put it back together. Now, it's a lot of work, because now with transfer portals, with a lot of different changes, you have, if we're talking college, if we have new kids coming in, we have people leaving, it's hard to build a proper roster, etc. So have equipping yourself with frameworks that are going to help the teams fix all like conflict problems before they arise and be able to navigate the situations and have that skill set is priceless. It is such a valuable tool, because it's the best long-term investment that you can make, in my opinion. Because conflict is inevitable. It will always happen. And I personally think conflict is good, because it allows us to grow and to learn, and you can pivot left and right. And no organization, corporate, sports, even families, right? There is always disagreements. Now, if you look at a family, people love each other and they're more willing to fix some things. But if you're a player competing for the same spot on the draft, why would you fix anything? Why wouldn't you want to have incentives to, shine and like make sure that the other your competitor is somewhere behind you? So, in my opinion, realizing that cross culture is also very important. Look at the Dodgers, how many foreign players we have. They need to do the work to make sure that they get integrated, right? It's different culture, different background, different training, different language. They don't even speak English. So to think that Dodgers would not be doing what they're doing right now if they didn't have the frameworks of integrating their players into the team. So I'm a huge advocate for learning more about it first and foremost, and then putting in the resources and the time to teach the leadership and then management, even of athletic departments, and then pass it on to the teams and the players to make sure that they're not only good on the field, but also professionals in life, and then know how to figure out their problems as they grow up. Because they have to, if the whether or not they make it to the professional leagues or not, it's crucial that they know how to properly figure out any type of disputes moving on.
Do you think we've reached the point where conflict is no longer a dirty word?
Conflict is a great word. I am a huge I think I'm a huge, I don't want to say advocate, but I think conflict is a wonderful tool that allows people to grow. And if you face it the right way, you're going to be able to see wonderful results. If you try and avoid conflict, that's where problems begin. So
Yeah.
what we do, so what we do here is teach people how to not be scared of it, but rather face it if it's already there and fix it or prevent it. That's
Yeah, fantastic.
it.
Well, I'm so glad that you were stubborn enough in your education to let some folks know that this is actually a real space to play professional.
Absolutely.
Play, put some research energy about this today.